Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning to you. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Working. I am. Not to give you just the facts, but to connect the dots. That's the issue. Today's show, a classic example of why we need to be reminded to connect the dots, to actually do the thinking, not the data accumulation. Those of you who listen to the show know what I'm talking about. Those of you who are listening for the first time, welcome. Health is connecting the dots. It is not accumulating the data. Case in point. Today's show, diseases of the eye and ear, how they are caused by defective cranial rhythms. Now, we understand the diseases of the eye and the ear in depth, volume upon volume, and we understand, some of us do, the cranial rhythms and what we mean. But actually, in practice, out there in the world, when you watch the myriads of people suffering from glaucoma, cataracts, optic neuritis, all sorts of infirmities to the eye, iritises, and then to the ear stuff, from the tinnituses to the I'm going deaf and I can't hear, so on and so forth, acoustic tumors, detached retinas. What you don't see, unfortunately, is all that information about the cranial rhythms applying on the spot to an understanding of why some people are generating disease. That's amazing to me. But then again, you got to think deep to get this stuff. So what I want to do in today's show, especially for those of you who have stuff going on in the eyes and the ears, other than taking a nutritional supplement, I want you to understand the hookup between another genre of medicine that's going to very powerfully influence whether or not your disease is going to progress or regress or disappear or take you all the way to deafness or blindness. So let's take a look at the cranial rhythms. Again, those of you who know the show, I guarantee you new shades on old things. And that's how we deepen our understanding. So there's something here for everybody today. Let's take a look. As always, get to the website straighttalk.cc, not .com, .cc with two T's. Picture number one. Now there it is. What a bizarre sight. A bunch of bones of the skull, all separated. Bizarre to look at. Look at picture number three. There's picture three. Now, those are the bones of the skull as we see them. Mind you, at the turn of the century, the last century, that is the 1900s, there was a dispute between British and Italian anatomists as to whether or not the sutures or the joints between the cranial bones actually had motion. Did the cranial bones move? And although they were separate bones, was there motion between these bones? Was the dispute. The English said no. The Italians said yes. This was long before anybody really understood the cranial rhythms. Although even in 1900, the cranial rhythm was understood. The cranial rhythm is the motion. The Italians were correct. The cranial rhythm is the motion between the bones of the skull. Or I should say, the flow or energy generated in part by the motion of the bones between the skull. And that motion, of course, is much clearer in illustration when you look at picture number one. So you're going to come back and take a look now at picture number one. And there you have it. All those bones are separated. As an infant, those bones are soft. As you age, those bones and the joints between those bones begin to ossify. They begin to thicken. There is less motion. A baby's skull is soft. An old man's skull is rock hard. This distinction is critical. The issue, of course, is what does this have to do with the eye and the ear? Well, I'm going to jump ahead and then go back, just so you know the overall concept here. If you turn to picture number five. If you look at picture number five, that's an anterior view of the skull. Those bones of the skull have an eye socket, that yellow in the eye socket there. If we blow that up, if we go to another picture and we blow up the eye, you've got to come all the way and you've got to look at, let's see, somehow that one didn't get in. But we have a little error here in the pictures today. You're going to have to use your imagination then. Picture number five, what I showed you, just showed you. If you blow up that eye socket, that yellow and blue and green and orange, those are the bones of the eye socket. Those bones have to move. Those bones don't move if we don't have a cranial rhythm. So everything that the eye is about the motion of the bones behind the eye. If we study disease in the eye and we don't have drainage, if we have stasis, if canals like in glaucoma are getting stuck, if as in cataracts, something's precipitating into the lens and causing cloudiness of the lens, as in cataracts, all of this is mitigated, mediated, enhanced, or eliminated by the vibration of the eye. The tissue itself is moving in variable degrees, and that motion is controlled by the motions of the bone behind the eye socket. Now let's further our understanding here of what we mean by the cranial rhythms. Let's move to picture number eight. And let's talk about the central junction box in the skull for what creates the motion in the skull, which is going to create the motion in the eye socket. And then we'll get to the ear in a moment. Point again being that the motion of the yellow bone there, the sphenoid, that motion is controlling the motion of the eye, and that yellow bone, as you'll see, is controlling the motion of the ear. Note on this picture, and again, you're on picture number eight, you're looking at the temporal bone now. You're looking at the middle cranial fossa. This middle cranial fossa, that's a picture of the skull with the top half of the skull removed. The whole brain is removed, so you're looking down from above to get you oriented. Now, that pink bone, the temporal bone, that's the bone that your ear sits in. Your eye socket, as you saw a moment ago, is largely that yellow bone, the sphenoid. When you looked at picture number five a moment ago, that yellow bone is the same yellow bone you're looking at right now in this picture. And what we're getting at here is that the temporal bone for the ear, which basically the entire ear sits in, and the yellow bone, which is the sphenoid, for the eye control the frequency of those organs. And what we call the cranial rhythm is controlling, therefore, the frequency of those bones and onto the organs. Let's take a look at the temporal bone. I want to show you a picture of the... And go down to picture 46. Come down to picture 46. There we go. We've got that one up now. Look at picture 46. That's a blow-up of the eye socket. That's the picture I was looking for. Look at that yellow bone. Look at the blue. Look at the purple. The green's the maxilla. The yellow's the sphenoid. That orange one's the zygoma. The blue one is the frontal bone. Look at that. Now look at picture 48. Let's just put the eye now in that eye socket. Now, it looks like the eye socket is floating independently of those bones. The truth is the eye socket is glued to those bones. Rather, the eye is glued to those bones. That glue, which is connective tissue, nerve tissue, tendon, ligament, fascia, fat, is all vibrating off the vibration of those bones. Now let's get down to the ear. Look at picture 56. There's the ear, the outer ear. There you have the eardrum, that purple thing. If you stick your finger in the ear and go straight down, you get to the eardrum. Then behind the eardrum, this is picture 56, you're looking at three bones. You're looking at the malleus, incus, and stapes. You're looking at the three bones of the middle ear. Those bones have to vibrate. The tympanic membrane, the eardrum, has to vibrate. Now, if you go all the way deeper into that, you're looking at the cochlear ear canals. That's the deep ear. That is the inner ear. That's what's going on when you're dizzy, when you have vertigo. Something going on in there is not going on correctly. Again, the point, look at the bone, that spongy white ear. That bone is the temporal bone. Your entire ear is encased in the temporal bone. That temporal bone, now hold that thought, come back all the way up. That temporal bone, go to picture 8 again. Picture 8. That temporal bone is connected to the sphenoid bone, is connected to the zygomatic arch, is connected to the occiput, and collectively, the motion between all of those bones determines whether or not your ear drains. Now, if you got that, now we can get into the details, the wonderful, beautiful, sacred detail. And why is this important? Because every single week somebody walks in with a different problem in the eye, a different problem in the ear, a health concern about this in the eye, that in the ear. And no one looks at the cranial rhythms. It's not done. It's not done in ophthalmology. It's not done generally in nutrition. And nobody thinks in terms of structural work in a way that could affect a system that, reasonably speaking, could affect the health and disease of the eye and the ear. Structure determines function. The concept here is, if you're looking at health concerns with the eye and the ear, you have to go to structure. You have to go to cranial systems that influence motion of bone. And that motion of bone is one important structural concern in the health of the body. Now, when you look at eye and ear, that these organ systems, these senses, are actually, their physical structures are embedded in the bone themselves. What does common sense tell you? We don't need 100,000 double placebo blind experiments to suggest what common sense would tell us immediately. No motion, no flow, no health. In the absence of health, we have decay and disease. Now, that's reasonable, but that's where the magic begins. Let's deepen our understanding of what we mean by the cranial rhythm and how they can affect the eye and the ear. All right, first, those bones. What moves those bones? Do they just move? Does the wind blow and those bones move? Well, here's one dynamic behind the cranial rhythm. It's called breath. Yes, breath. Why breath? Well, breath is a vibration. There's a link, and I don't mean your normal everyday breath. I don't mean the breath that you normally take untrained. I'm talking about true breath. I'm talking about breath that you train. I'm talking about trained breath that can enhance the frequency of the cranial bones. What cranial bones? Let's take a look. All right, so let's do this. Let's go back to picture number 8. Back to picture number 8. That yellow bone is called the sphenoid. Between the blue bones is another bone called the ethmoid bone. Let's take a look at the ethmoid bone in different pictures here. Okay? Go to picture 14. Picture 14. The top of picture 14, top left, you're going to see ethmoid bone. It's going to be composed of two fascinating structures. If you want the science fiction to begin, let it begin right now. Ethmoid. And in the ethmoid bone, we have something called the crista galla, and we have something called the cribriform plate. Crista galla, if you trace it back pre-Latin, before Latin, into Greek, into Egyptian, means something to the equivalent of starship, spaceship. A vehicle through which you transcend the normal everyday reality. That's what it means. It goes back to hieroglyphics. It goes back to the time when we didn't call things by their English name or by their Latin name or by their Greek name. We called things through ideograms, meaning characters. And you know this today, say, the Chinese characters. The Chinese characters take years to learn to work. You don't become literate in traditional Chinese. Mao tried to simplify that with pinyin, the pinyin system. But nonetheless, you didn't learn to write Chinese until you were 20 to 25 years old. Think of that. Because the system was so complicated. Because a character can mean so much. All the cultures were like this at one time. You can talk about India. You can talk about China. You can talk about Egypt. Every culture had some ideographic type of a concept in their communication process. This is when the world worked much, much more slowly and much, much more deeply. In a character was a poem. In a character was a volume. Crista galla is a hint to something. It's a hint to the anatomical significance of the ethmoid bone. Sure enough, if you understand breath, well, let's look at the ethmoid bone a little bit more closely, okay? Look at picture number 15. There's picture 15, and you're looking at the ethmoid bone from behind and from the front, from behind and from the top. I think I'm going to give you a better picture. Let's take the ethmoid bone here. Let's look at picture number 16. I think that would be better. There's picture 16. Now, we broke down the ethmoid bone. And you see that crista galla in the center. And you see the cribriform plate with the holes in it. Those holes transmit the vibration of air as it goes up the nostrils and into the ethmoid bone. Those holes transmit the vibration of the air, as the air goes up through the nostrils, of course, the air's got to be capable of getting through your nostrils. The nostrils have to be open. The nostrils must be patent. Without that, we have big problems. Air that doesn't get through the nose relates to the cranial rhythms, and the cranial rhythms relate to the health of the eye and the ear. And when we have issues in the eye and the ear, and we have nasal occlusions, you have a place to dig deeper. That's big. Always overlooked, but big. Let's look at that cribriform plate now and understand it's a bunch of holes. It's a sinus. It's the ethmoid sinus. And that air up through the nose hits the plate, vibrates the plate, and that vibration hits the brain, hits particularly the dural tissue of the brain. The skin of the brain is vibrated. But it's just not the skin of the brain. It's the bones. Air vibrates the bones. The breath vibrates the bones, and the bones have sutures, and those sutures or joints between the bones are movable. Breath has profound influence on the cranial rhythm. The vibration of the dural tissue, the flow of the cerebral spinal fluid, is in part driven off the breath. That doesn't mean the cycle of breath matches the cycle of the rhythm. It doesn't mean the vibration of the breath to inhale and exhale and that rate equals the vibration of the bone. No, that doesn't do that. They are not directly proportional. But make no mistake about it. Breath moves the bones of the brain. And the bones of the brain hold the eye and the ear. Critical to understand. So let's hold that. Don't want to tear each topic up too deeply. I want you to integrate to understand why, if you're running around lost with real concern about eye and ear, and no one's looked at cranial flow, they're missing the point. And whether that's your doctor's at Kaiser or whether it's your local health practitioner, to really get a deeper understanding of the absolute vital significance of this. Okay, I'll lay it down another way. Guy walks in, he's going deaf. Guy walks in, he's got glaucoma. And no one's taken a look at the fact that that man has nasal polyps and that man clenches his jaw at night. And from the polyps, which block the air, to the jaw, which shifts the first cervical vertebra, his diseases are going to get worse. No one's really addressing that. He wants to know, his doctors want to know, how we can slow down, eliminate, decelerate the deafness or the blindness. And we use drugs and we use nutraceuticals and herbs and this and that and the other thing. And the bottom line is his structural body, because he clenches at night and he can't get air through the nose, is destroying his senses. I see this all the time. And what it means is, for as much as independently of the eye and the ear, we honor the cranial rhythms, you can go out to loads of places and find people that are talking about the importance of cranial flow. But I want this to stick to your ribs. I want this to go deep into your behavioral pattern. I want you to think in terms of solutions to problems that make sense, that just don't get circulated. But you've got to study it. Study it with me. Let's go deeper. So there's your ethmoid bone, your cribriform plate, your crista galla. Now let's understand this from another standpoint. All right, let's go back to that old picture again. Let's go back to picture 8. There's picture 8, that yellow bone, the sphenoid. There's something in the center of the sphenoid bone. It's called the sella turcica. I want you to go to picture 10. Actually, go to picture 11. Picture 11, the sella turcica, home of the pituitary gland. There's a divot. There's a depression in that yellow sphenoid bone that the pituitary gland sits in. Your central junction box for your entire neuroendocrine system sits in the sphenoid. I mean, I don't know what else to say. If you don't get it from that, I don't know where you're going to get it from. The hypothalamic pituitary axis is encased in the sphenoid gland, in the sphenoid bone. And that sphenoid bone has a motion. And if it loses its motion, say you don't get air through the nose, say you clench, if it depresses, distorts, defects its motion, how are you going to optimize your neuroendocrine system? You're running around with adrenal fatigue. You're running around with low or high thyroid. You're running around with all sorts of testosterone or estrogen or progesterone imbalances. You've got to look all the way upstairs to the central junction box. You're sympathetic dominant and you don't know why, and you don't know how to get out of your anxiety pattern. You're depressed. You're ridden with anxiety. And we're not looking up there. We're not looking at that bone that's encasing your central junction box. And this is my point. Now, eye and ear, which this show centers around, gee, what could the hormonal system, what could the neuroendocrine system possibly have to do with the eye and ear? I just can't imagine what, can you? Yes, and right, I'm being tongue-in-cheek now. Do you know something? When people have glaucoma is a disease where the optic pressures go high, compress the optic nerve, and start to send you blind. And it's caused, as standard ophthalmology understands, by a blockage in the drainage port of the eye through a tissue called the canal of Schlemm. Not phlegm, Schlemm. It's just a drainage port. It's a canal, and it's supposed to drain the optic fluid that your body produces. And if that canal gets plugged, the optic pressure goes up, compresses the optic nerve. You start progressively over a period of years to go blind for a number of reasons. Do you know what they give people when they give them things like Lumigan and Timox or Tiamox, whatever the name of it is? These are good drugs. Don't get me wrong. If you've got glaucoma and you have no other choice, take these drugs. You've got to bring your optic pressures down. But do you know what they do? They vasodilate the canal of Schlemm. They block the sympathetic fibers that will constrict it. They actually artificially induce a more balanced autonomic nervous system through the drug. They block the sympathetic fibers with the drug. And they vasodilate the drainage. It's brilliant. Pharmaceutically, it's brilliant. Those drugs are fantastic if you don't have any choice, if you don't know any of this, if you're not in a position to deploy, employ, initiate healing mechanisms, God-given, that is supreme, and many people, unfortunately, just are not. They don't even know this stuff. So those drugs work. They bring the optic pressures down. But it's fascinating to me, and I share this with you, that what those drugs do is vasodilate the canal of Schlemm by blocking the autonomic nerves that would otherwise constrict it. When you don't have patency, when you don't have flow in the sphenoid, in the temporal bone, you can't control your autonomic nerves because the parasympathetic-sympathetic balance of the autonomics is buried inside the hypothalamus and somewhat the pituitary. Once again, you've got to get that motion into the sphenoid bone. Well, how? Well, we started with breath. We started with vibration into the ethmoid sinus. Let's keep going. Let's just look at the sphenoid first. Go to picture 6. You just can't look at that bone. Look at that bone. Isn't God great? Look at that thing. Mothra. I mean, look at that bone. It's just sitting there. That's a frontal view of the sphenoid. That's not a coincidence that it looks. That thing could just fly right out of your forehead. And there's a saddle in it. There's a divot in it that the core chakra, the core neurological junction box of the body is sitting in. that's a coincidence? It's a coincidence that DNA is a double helical strand like a staircase? It's a coincidence that the central junction box that the entire neuroendocrine system derives from looks like that? It's a coincidence that the cribriform plate is separated by something called Crista Galla, traced back to pre-Greek times, Egyptian times, and pre-dynastic Egyptian times, had something to do with starship or spaceship or space travel or time travel? These things are coincidences. I don't think so. I think there's something amazing, something godly in this design. I share that with you. All right, let's keep going. Here's picture 10. Look at picture 10. Look at picture 10 there. That's the pituitary gland and the hypothalamus just above it. The hypothalamus controls the autonomic nervous system. And it's the hypothalamus is approximating the third ventricle. I'm going to get to the ventricular system in a minute, but do not forget that there is a pumping mechanism, as in the heart, but in the brain, called the ventricular system. And don't forget this ventricular system is pumping the hypothalamus. Well, I thought the sphenoid was pumping the hypothalamus. I thought breath was pumping the sphenoid. It is. What we have here that we call health, freedom from disease, healing, miraculous reversal of otherwise chronic progressive disease, is a symphony that asks you to ignite all the different limbs of health, if you know they even exist. And if you know they exist, you have to ignite them. Not superfluously, not in your imagination, but in your visceral, organic experience. If I tell you that when I stretch my jaw, I feel my eyeballs get warm, I'm not kidding you. If I tell you I take a breath and I feel my upper cervical spine shift its position, I'm not kidding you. If anybody worth their salt in applied structural medicine tells you they have an organic, a physical experience of what they're talking about, listen to them. Because then they're not imagining things. And optimally, they can share that experience with you. So you'll know in your being and in your experience, this is not a lot of mumbo jumbo. Someday I'll design studies. Real studies. Studies that are designed to show truly the significance of these topics. But for hundreds of years, these issues, cranial flow from Fulford to Stillman to the early chiropractors to the yogics to the Taoist masters to anybody that's ever moved a body to understand what health is, traditionally we don't hook it into hard science. But there's a way to do it. Not that that's your priority. Why even care? Experience it for yourself. Get involved in these things. But remember, there's a physical experience waiting for you. So when you get to the end of the show and you say, okay, what do I do? Jump in to all those things that move structure. Yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, Kung Fu, chiropractic, osteopathic, Pilates, cranial work, cranial osteopathy, cranial orthodontics. It's all out there. But you see, we don't make that connection when we walk in and we say, my retina keeps detaching to everything I just mentioned. We don't make that connection when we walk in and we say, I'm going blind progressively with this glaucoma and I need to do a canaloplasty. I need to go in there and physically alter the canal of Schlemm, which is regrettable, but now it's an emergency. But maybe I could have understood that I had options. See, it's making the connections. The show's about connections, not data. You have to think to make connections. All right, the ventricular system. Let's keep going. Picture number 13. This is a godly picture. Look at that. It's a lateral view. It's a lateral view and a posterior view. It's a posterior view on the right of your brain, and that's a lateral view on the left of your brain. And in the blue and in the pink are the ventricles, like balloons. Balloons inside the brain that pump. Inside the ventricle, we make the cerebral spinal fluid. That cerebral spinal fluid travels. It travels up and down the spine. Let's take a look at picture 21. Take a look at picture 21 and take a look at those arrows in picture 21. Those arrows of picture number 21 show the flow of that fluid that's made. You see in the center? Picture 21 now. The center of picture 21 in the red. In the red. That's where, with those capillaries, we make cerebral spinal fluid. So the blood of the choroid plexus makes this clear white, this clear transparent fluid called CSF. And it flows according to where those arrows. So it's going all around the brain, in between all the cells of the brain, down the spinal cord, towards the sacrum, up back into the brain where it drains out. A perfectly contained self-sufficient system. And its flow is integrally related to the pumping of the ventricular system. So if you go to picture 20, if you go to picture 20 and you look at the ventricular system pumping the cerebral spinal fluid in picture 21, well, now you're getting another glimpse into the cranial flow. What cranial flow? Well, there are tissues moving. The ventricular system is pumping. That's the cranial rhythm. It vibrates the dural tissue. That vibration of the dural tissue is, by definition, the cranial rhythm. If you watch the dural tissue of the brain or the spinal cord go into some sort of contraction expansion, some sort of vibration, that by definition, John Upledger, is what we mean by the cranial rhythm. But that is under the influence now of the motion between the bones of the skull. That is under the influence of breath up through the crista galla. That is under the influence of all sorts of factors that we're going to continue to explore. And the benefit of motion in the sphenoid, and the benefit of motion in the temporal bone, and the benefit of motion in the sphenoid that holds and encases the entire neuroendocrine system, not the entire, but the core of the neuroendocrine system. The benefit is that these systems function right. You don't go blind, you don't go deaf, and you stay balanced in your neuroendocrine function. Okay, we're putting it together. That's what we're doing. We're putting it together. You may have to listen to the show again. You should listen to the show again. People will listen to the show and then say, okay, what can I do for my detached retina now? People listen as if they're just accumulating data. That's not what you're being asked to do here. I'm harping on a critical distinction that represents a critical voice in America and in American health and in world health. And that is to attach to things more deeply rather than skirting the surface at faster and faster speeds. If you want benefit, you don't increase the rate of acquisition. You increase your depth of understanding. Rate of acquisition does not equal knowledge. Depth of understanding equals knowledge. Understand two things well instead of 1,000 things topically. Critical distinction. Don't care if you're sick of hearing it, because I know it's not sinking in on the level it's supposed to. because I see what's out there every single week. I see what's out there. You know, people don't like that one thing explains many things. People like many things to explain one thing. It's exciting. Let's talk about the 500 causes of cataracts. We're going to talk about the 500 causes. Rather than the one system, the one defective mechanism that causes 5,000 problems. We always want something new. See, this is the point. And you all know this in your learning experience. As you mastered what you needed to master, you needed to attach more deeply to what you learned. And there was a point where new seminar, doctors do this all the time. They keep going to new seminars. They keep learning new techniques. They keep getting into new perspectives when they haven't learned one perspective with any type of depth. Okay, I'll stop. Picture 20. Look at the ventricular system. Just take a look at it. Forget the show. Just take a look at that. That's inside your brain. Picture 23. Take a look at that. Look at picture 23. Just look at that. That's amazing. Picture number 22. That green thing, the pineal gland. That which releases DMT, dimethyltryptamine. That which releases a chemical that changes consciousness, that gives you new insights from different vantage points into the problems you confront each and every day. Out of that gland it comes. That's hard science. That little green thing there is tintillated consistently by the third ventricle of your brain. Yes, there is a strong relationship between your cranial rhythm and your pineal gland. That is not from weak inference. It's from strong inference. There is relationship between your ability to secrete opiates and even more exotic chemicals like DMT to the cranial rhythm. And what this means to the eye and the ear, how can one even say? How can one even say? I mean, although, isn't it reasonable? Isn't it reasonable to say? Well, I'll give you an example here. Here's an example. The liver reflexes to the eye. In Chinese medicine, we have eye conditions. We understand disease of the eye as malfunctions in the liver. People who hold their anger in to the point where they burn a hole in their gut, heat up the liver and detach their retinas. That's right. People heat up the eye, liver wind, liver fire, from tight constriction within the liver, within the biliary system, from passive aggressive personalities, burning internally, afraid to express, actually send cauldrons of volcanic-like heat up from the liver to bake the eye. And that's how you detach retinas. That is the truth. So there. It's a pattern in Chinese medicine. That's a pattern in Vedic medicine. And what it means is your body has gone so powerfully sympathetic dominant. It has gone so chaotically into rage, internal rage, internal frustration, internal anger, internal anxiety, grinding up your teeth at night down to the gum line. How many of you clench? That's something to look at, because it creates heat in the liver. And that heat is driven up to the eye, and it begins to derange the eye. It begins to derange the ear. And my point to you is, your journey out of that, if that sounds like you, be honest with yourself. Does it sound somewhat like you? Well, here's the thing. Your journey out of that is in relationship to the production and deposition of opiates in the blood. the centers of the brain that produce the opiates are those opiates which evolve you out of those destructive conditions emotionally. And that very much relates to the eye and the ear. The kidney is the ear. Fear is the ear. Liver is the eye. Anger, frustration, resentment is the eye. When people degenerate in these places, there's much ado about the emotional subset, the emotional foundation, the defect in emotional flow. You have to wrap your head around that. That's a big one. But when I point to this pineal gland, picture 22, out of that pineal gland comes a chemical. Out of that pineal gland comes a chemical that alters the way we look at the world to a better, more peaceable, more loving embracement of things as they are. And that's an evolution for all of us, because that's not often our first choice. The ear and the eye has emotional pain in it. The emotional pain you suffer, anger and fear, live in the eye and they live in the ear. And again, my point, without patency, coherence through the cranial system, you're not going to get to the opiate experience. And that was my point. Let's take a look at the diaphragm. Picture 27. Wow. Look at that. That is your diaphragm. Those two little lines out of it, those thick cords. That's where the diaphragm attaches to your spine. Look at picture 25. There's the diaphragm now inside your rib cage where it belongs. And we looked at 27 because that's what it looks like more 3D. Look at picture 26. That's the diaphragm from the underside of the dome. And what's the point? Well, here's the point. Look at 26. Yeah. 26. The underside to that diaphragm, that white sheath. When you inhale, that diaphragm has to go down. That tendon, the central tendon, has to stretch out. If it doesn't stretch out, you can't connect the motion of the spine to the cranial bones. Eye and ear and health and cranial rhythms. Cranial rhythms, meaning motion of the bones of the skull, relate not just to air through the nostril, but they relate to the flex of the spine with proper diaphragmatic breath. Breath means the spine moves and wiggles. The dura, the dural tissue stretches. The spine must flow through breath off the patency or plasticity of the diaphragm. If the diaphragm is rigid, the spine doesn't move. If the spine doesn't move, your cranial system will be locked. So I say breath through the nose, yes. I say Christogalli, yes. I say motion in the temporal and sphenoid bone off breath, yes, through the nose, yes. But you see, it's diaphragmatic breath that we're looking at here, because the spine relates to the cranium. The bones of the spine have to move so the bones of the skull can move. It's all one beautiful system. It's all one beautiful system. Now let's come down to the diaphragm down low. Let's come down to the diaphragm down low. The diaphragm down low, picture number 31. Look at that. Now there's an angle you don't look at every day. Picture 31, the pelvic diaphragm of the male. It's a thin sheath, just like the diaphragm up under the rib cage. It's a thin sheath. Loaded with that white connective tissue, that's the pelvic diaphragm. Look at picture 32. That's the pelvic diaphragm of the female. Those sheaths, those diaphragms, those drums, that's the covering to a drum. They have a tone. They have a tonicity. They have a strength. They have a contractile power. They have a flexibility. And that perineal diaphragm, along with the diaphragm at the rib cage, is very related to the diaphragm in your brain, meaning the ventricular system. So you can't talk about the eye and the ear unless you talk about the pelvis. Okay, let's get it real here. Somebody walks in and their glaucoma has just gotten worse. It's been under control for years. And now the optic pressures have doubled. But 4 months ago, they fused L5 to S1. Their fifth lumbar vertebra and their sacrum were fused. Or they broke their ankle and they fused their ankle. Or they just had a knee surgery that was unsuccessful. Or they broke their pelvis in a car accident. But what does that have to do with the eye? Now you know. Now you know. You see? Now you're connecting the dots. Now you're thinking like you're supposed to think. Now you're getting the model. Everything's connected to everything. What we do is we particulate the issue. Look at the eye and find out what's wrong with the eye. You have cataracts because you've deposited certain proteins into the matrix of the lens, and we can't do anything about it, so we'll just replace the lens. You have blockage in the canal of Schlemm, and if we can't vasodilate the canals, we'll simply then give you a canaloplasty and open up those canals and drain out the optic fluids in a different pathway. And nobody's looking at your fractured pelvis. You see? I feel you now. I know you're getting this. You have to think like this. You have to use the data to connect the dots. Using the data without connecting the dots and then accumulating more dots at a certain point is counterproductive. This is my point, and this is the point of the show. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. If you're lost in the labyrinth of health, let me help you connect the dots. That is really what I do really good with. Helping you connect the dots. If you want to jump on that bandwagon, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. I'll be broadcasting out of San Francisco pretty soon. I'm adding another radio show to the repertoire, and we're just going to keep going, okay? That'll start the first week of May. In addition, it'll just add to this broadcast. All right, let's keep going. Where do we end up? This is where we end up. We end up here. We end up in picture 34. Now, here's picture 34. Look at those three heads. That was you there on the left. That's you in your 50s, and that's you in your 70s and 80s. That head comes forward. Something bad happens as that head comes forward. As picture 36 says, if forward head posture, picture 36, if forward head posture is a health problem, why do we tend to ignore it? Because we don't understand. We don't understand deeply enough how much of a health problem it actually is. So let me elaborate. Let's look at picture 40. Picture 40. Do you see that blue thing there? Picture 40. That's the body of the first cervical vertebra. It's the body of the first cervical vertebra. And that bone, the atlas, let's take a look at that atlas. Let's take a look at that atlas. Let's go to picture number 42. There's two bones, C1 and C2. This is picture number 42. C1, you see those big facets, meaning those big cups that your skull should sit on top of? Look at C1. And those two grooves in that bone, C1. Not the thing sticking up in the middle. That's the odontoid process of C2. talking about those two divots in C1. Your skull sits on that. Your skull sits on that. That's important. Now, let's go to picture 41. Picture 41. Look at that. Isn't that neat? Picture 41, it swivels. You see? C1 rotates on C2. Also, the occiput, your skull, it rotates and separates from C1. There's separation in health. There's separation from your occiput to C1. And there's rotation of C1 on C2. There's even rotation of the occiput on C1. Not an enormous amount, but it's there. And it's a critical amount. But what happens, all right, what happens? Now go back to picture number 34. What happens when you're the guy in the middle? What's really happening at 60, 70, or 80 when you're the guy on the extreme right? What happens as the head comes forward is you don't get motion between the occiput C1 and C2. This has a catastrophic effect. And I'm not understating this because on picture 43 here, on picture 43 is the vagus nerve. And that vagus nerve, once the head goes forward, gets compressed. And once it gets compressed, the autonomic nerve flow, the parasympathetic nerve flow mediated from the hypothalamus is stuck. Well, the cranial flow, that cranial flow is what flow of the vagus is about. The cranial of the brain is the flow in the vagus. Now, if you put all those facts together, you have optimal motion in those bones. And optimal motions means less deposition and more drainage. And that, my friends, is the essence of the eye and the ear. 714-850-1007 if you're lost in the labyrinth of health. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.